And the reason why we're all here tonight is Shane P. from Orchid. Let's give him a round.
Shane, alcoholic. So I want to thank Glenn. Where is he at? Oh, thank you, Glenn, for asking me to come and speak tonight. I put him off a couple of times because I had a lot going on, but I wanted to put him off again, but I drugged myself in here anyway. And I want to ask you guys something. Is how many people in here have stood up here and spoke at this podium? All right. Was any of you guys nervous? All right. I'm nervous. So anyway, so I'm going to... So to the best of my ability, I'm going to try and share with you guys, just like it says out of the big book, you know, what it was like when I was out there drinking, what happened so that I got sober, and what my life is like today. So so I started off, I grew up in a little town in Idaho, and some of my earliest memories were of my father dragging my brother out of bed by his ear. You know, and I was always living in fear. You know, I was afraid of my dad. We had a real working farm where you had to get up and feed horses and do all that stuff. And I just tried to stay real, real quiet and out of the way, you know. And I always felt like I was just less than, like we were poorer than everybody else I went to school with. I never felt like I was a part of anything, you know. And I had an older brother. He was 6 years older than I. And he had this 1967 GTO, which a lot of people call a goat. And so I would detail that car for him, and as a reward, he would come home. He'd have some, at the time they had these little things called Right Time, and you know, all that old cheap booze they used to have. You know, I'd bring some home, and I'd usually have a friend stay over, and we'd drink, you know. And you know, in between that, having that drink and having like two or three and then throwing up, there was this little space in between where everything just felt right, you know, where I felt like I was part of, you know. And that's, you know, and I've chased that feeling for the next 42 years, you know, that little space in between where I felt like I belonged, where I was part of everything, you know. So I went on to high school, and same thing in high school, partied. I hung out with the guys that were my kind, you know. We'd go on, we called it Hood's Hill or Hood's Corner, you know. We'd go down there and smoke cigarettes, you know. We were the bad people in the school, right, you know. And you know, I graduated out of high school. I went in the military for a short while, and I got out, and I got married. And that lasted for about 7 years, and had a son. And at the end of that period, the last thing happened in that relationship was I shoved that woman down in front of that child, and I walked out. And I never seen that son again, except for maybe two times in the next 20 years. Lost track of him for 20 years. So my life went on about the same. You know, it was drinking. You know, I was a daily drinker. I was a functioning alcoholic, I guess is a term I like to use, you know. Because I would get up, I would go to work, you know, I'd get that paycheck. And then I'd go out Friday night and blow about half of it, you know, and keep the rest. So I got married again for a short period, had another son. And that son I kept track of, kept contact, you know, did the long distance relationship thing. And it was a real short marriage, like 2 years. And then... But it was always the same story, you know. I could not, for the life of me, could not keep a promise or be, you know, be responsible in a relationship. I just couldn't do it, you know. I had to do my thing. I had that little spring inside me, and when that thing started getting too tight, you know, I had to take off. I had to run. I couldn't stay and be responsible. I couldn't do it, you know. So that's you know, that same path went on and on. I moved over here. I was married for 15 years, got a divorce, and after that divorce, I'll go back a little bit. Prior to that divorce, I was running with a bike club, and we were going down to Los Alamos about 4 or 5 nights a week drinking, you know, and it was just, even if I had to get up and go to work the next day, we're down there drinking, and it went from beer to vodka, you know, it's vodka on the rocks. And that was when everything took a turn. And that's also when they say, you know how they say the alcohol quits working, you know, it stopped working at that point. No longer was I feeling that feeling of being part of it. It was just, I just felt like I had to drink. That good little fun part wasn't there anymore. It was just I had to drink, you know. So I ended up getting, I got divorced, and after that, I think it was maybe 2 or 3 weeks, maybe a month, I don't know. I had my own place, I was vodka in the fridge. And I remember I was at work, and I worked for Specialty Crane and Rigging over here before they sold out to Bragg. I was running the shop. And I remember the first time that I had to actually leave work and go get a drink. I couldn't make it through the day, man. I couldn't do it. I was sitting there working, and I was so restless, irritable, and discontent that no matter what, I was like, I had to leave work and go get a drink, man. And I knew at that point, you know, there wasn't any turning back long before that. But I knew I'd reached that point. That was another high level, you know, another level of drinking, you know. It was just there. You know, I knew at that point I was dedicated no matter what. So I met who's my wife now. We knew each other for quite a while. We were, you know, dating. I was moving in and out. I'd go over and stay and I'd leave. And I remember one time I was out drinking with my friends, with my guys in the club, and I came riding in about noon. I was already plowed. And I rode up, parked on her porch, and I was able to get the kickstand down, and I made it in the door, and I fell face plant on the couch with one leg hanging off the couch, man. I was just, and her son seen me, and he asked her, he goes, "Is he an alcoholic?" You know? So, as miracles do happen, you know, one of her good friends is, a lot of you guys know her, it's Heidi H. And, Heidi was came in, and she was living with Annette at the time, and I was staying there. And Heidi came up to me, and she'd already been in the program for a while. You know, she got sober in here, and she came up, and they asked me, and she gave me a big book, and she says, "Hey, do you want to go to a meeting?" You know. So I went to a speaker meeting with them, and I walked in there, and I sat down there, and I looked around, and I'm like, I've got nothing in common with these people, man. I got nothing in common with these drunks. No way. And that meeting got over, and everybody joined up to do the prayer. Of course, I knew nothing about this stuff, and I just walked through the line, man. I was like, broke the ranks and went through, and I walked out, you know. And I said, I'm not doing that, you know. I'm not like those people. I'm not doing that. Never even cracked the book, never looked at it. As a matter of fact, I don't even know where that book's at today. And so I said, I can do this on my own. So I quit drinking. Was a dry drunk for about 6-7 months. I was running, working out, man. I mean, I was doing the deal. I was staying sober. I had it. But the problem was nobody could stand to be around me. Man, I was miserable. I hated everybody. I hated myself. Nobody could do anything right. I was just nobody. I mean, and it was, you know, and I know it was bad. I look back on it now, you know, and I know it was bad. And then the day came, because I didn't have a defense against the first drink. So the day came and I drank again. You know, and I told myself, I'm just going to have a little wine. You know, I don't like wine anyway. I'll have a little wine here and there. You know, and outside of 3 months, you know, that was 50 at the time. And outside of 3 months, I was drinking, a daily drinker again, just right back to doing my thing, man. And it got to a point where my Annette wouldn't ride with me anymore on the bike. As a matter of fact, we were drinking at the house and the guys were over. She'd just leave, you know, and it was, I mean, it was to that point. And the last night I drank, we were out throwing darts in the garage, and it was just after my 51st birthday, and I'd been drunk pretty much for about 3 days straight. And I went up to bed, and Annette was laying there, and I had a breakdown, man. I just asked myself, I was like, how did I get here again? How in the hell did I get here again? I can't do this. I know I can't do this. And I mean, I was crying, I was just, and she goes, why don't you call Heidi? So I called and left a message, and you know, just like we do in here, she showed up at the house, brought me to my first meeting here, and I sat right over there in that corner. And I think Amber was here. I think Billy was here at that meeting, probably a few of you other people, you know. I sat really close to that door so I could run if I needed to. And I didn't know anything about this program at all. I knew nothing about it. I didn't know anything about the steps. I didn't even know what AA was, you know, and other than that one speaker meeting I went to. And Heidi and Lisa B would take me around to meetings, and I remember I came in here, I was sitting where this gentleman is back here on this pad, and I was sitting there with Lisa B, and they were saying newcomers, you know. And she goes, that's you. And it's been about my third or fourth meeting. I never raised my hand. I thought you had to sign up and pay dues, you know, to be a member. And she goes, that's you. And I'm like, what? She goes, raise your hand. I, All right, so I got my hand up. And then, so that was my first time I raised my hand. And then she introduced me to my sponsor. I met Joe Kay over at the Lion's Den on a Tuesday night meeting. And Joe, he led me through the steps, you know, as outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And I worked them to the best of my ability, you know. I know I didn't do everything right. I don't know if it's humanly possible to cover everything your first time around. I've since done them a second time, and I really need to do them a third time. So I was, I think I was about 2 years sober when I think the fog finally started to lift a little bit. You know, I drank for so long that I, you know, I was having trouble remembering things from the past. I always felt like I had this little fog around me, you know, and then after 2 years, it kind of started to clear. I think I started feeling things again. You know, I remember laying in the bottom of the bathtub, curled in a ball, crying because I had feelings and I didn't know what the hell they were, you know. Life was different, you know, when you've been an alcoholic since you were 12 years old, you know, you've got that 12-year-old mentality, you know. And, you know, you think like a 12-year-old, even though you're 51, you know. I just kept doing the deal. I was going to meetings. I was sponsoring guys. After my first year, I think, Joe took me outside and introduced me to this guy and said, "You're going to be a sponsor." I had no idea how to do that. So I did, you know, I was sponsoring guys, and I remember I was probably on my fourth or fifth person, you know, and these guys just kept leaving and going. I'm like, I felt bad, you know, like I'm doing something wrong, you know, and I remember my grand sponsor saying, he said that he got interviewed as a sponsor, and he said that he asked him what his success rate was. And he said 100%, he stayed sober through every one of them, you know. So, you know, that sponsorship works two ways. You know, I learned that it keeps me sober, you know, and hopefully somebody, you know, the guy you're sponsoring stays sober. I have quite a few guys that I've sponsored, a lot of guys with a lot of time right now, and not due to me, that's due to them doing their work, you know, not what I did. I don't take credit for any of it. So I decided that we were three and a half, I think it was a little after my third year of sobriety. My wife and I, we got married, had a beautiful wedding, you know. I had it in our backyard. Some people from here were there. And, you know, I stood up there and I made these promises, you know. I promised that I would do everything I could to make her happy, you know, that I would be loving, kind. And just to show you that just because you're in the program doesn't mean, you know, that you're going to do everything that you're supposed to do. You know, a few months later, my little brother died. You know, I went through a dark period. I had, I lost all feeling. I couldn't, you know, I felt like I was just walking around, just breathing. I questioned life. I questioned my relationship, you know. And as a result, we had a rupture in our relationship, you know. And once again, I wanted to cut and run. I moved down to Santa Barbara. I said, you know, this is all right. You know, and I started thinking, you know, this is pretty cool. I can start going to bars again and start doing this and doing that. And I was still talking to my sponsor, you know, and he told me, he said, you know what? He said, we don't run today. He goes, you're going to go back. You're going to do everything within your power to make right the wrong that you did. Like, you know, make amends, do it, make it right, you know. And if things don't work, then they don't work, but you're not, you know, we don't run today. And, you know, I thank God for that, you know, because I went back and I did the work, you know, I did everything in my power to repair that relationship, you know, and as a result, you know, today I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. I have the best relationship that I've ever had in my entire life. 100% all in life today, where before I think I always kept that little escape chip in my pocket, you know, get out free, you know. I never, you know, I always had that little part of me that said, you know what, you know, just maybe, you know, just maybe I can drink again, or just maybe I can do whatever I want, you know, and not be held, not be accountable for myself, you know, because I just, I'd never done that in my entire life, you know, but today I'm there, you know, and it feels great. And the other thing I want to share is that that I think part of what was a turning point for me in my life changing from just doing the deal, doing the program, working the steps, going to meetings, was I finally figured out how to get myself out of myself's way. You know, it was me. I was in my way. I never 100% turned my will and my life over to the care of God as described in the book. You know, I was, even though I was doing the deal, I was still driving the bus, you know. I was still the director, you know. I was a writer, the director. I was the lead man, you know. I never, and it's true, you know. It's true, you know. And it's harder than a person thinks it is to completely be 100% all in and letting God lead you in through your path in life, you know. And today I believe that's true, you know. And some of the gifts we get in here, you know, when my little brother passed away, I was able to go home and be part of with my parents. Every funeral I ever went home to, I was always the guy that was showed up at the funeral drunk, you know, and afterwards I was the one, now we need a big party, right? We're all going to party and get drunk. And I was actually able to go there. I gave his eulogy. I was able to stand up like I'm standing up right here today, and I was able to talk about my little brother, you know, and I wasn't drunk. You know, I was there. I was able to go up to my mom, my dad, my sister, my other brother. I was able to hug him and hold him and really have real feelings and not have him masked by alcohol, you know. Right. And the people that taught me how to walk through that sober were people like Joe that walked through it with his dad and Luke, you know. Luke stood up here. I know him talking about when his wife Pam died, you know, and these guys that came before me showed me how to do that, you know. So I knew that I didn't have to drink, you know, that I could walk through that sober. And that's, you know, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And, excuse me. So after I went back home and was working on repairing my relationship, you know, I realized that part of the problem with my life and part of the problem that was going on with my relationship was that I didn't know what love was. I didn't know how to be intimate. I didn't know how to be present in life and to be there and to show up. And my wife wanted to go to this workshop, and I kept telling her, nah, I'm not going, you know. And she sent me a link to go look at it, and I'm like, and I didn't even open it, you know. I'm like, I'm just not doing this. But I knew in my heart of hearts, you know, that somewhere in there, in the back of my head, there was that little piece of me that knew that if I didn't, that we were done. You know, we just weren't going to make it. So for some reason, I opened that link up and I looked at it, and I told her, you know what, let's buy tickets, let's go, you know. And we went to this workshop up north in Northern California. And a couple of beautiful things happened there. You know, one of the things, and I share this because I believe that part of this, being in this program, being willing to be willing and to be able to step outside of my comfort zone, I learned here. It all started right here, you know. And I walked up there, and I remember we walked up to this big hall, and there was people in there dancing and moving and everything. And I was like, I'm just like, well, I guess I'm going in. And I went in. And that was the start, you know, that was the start. And a couple of beautiful things happened, and one of them was I learned how, you know, they talk about prayer and meditation, but I could never meditate. I got a monkey mind, and I can't shut this thing up for more than 5 minutes, or I couldn't before. Never, you know. And I'd have to count sheep to go to sleep, you know, or read a book, watch a movie. It just doesn't work for me. So I was actually, for the first time in my entire life, I was able to shut my mind down and just sit there and just be present and not have something in the back of my head talking to me the whole time. And I was so happy about it and so excited that I actually started crying. I was like, this is the most beautiful thing that's ever happened. You know, being present, you know, being there, you know. And the other thing I learned at that workshop was how to actually sit there and have, look a person in the eye and have a intimate conversation. And by intimate, I mean, you know, you're sharing the truth of yourself and not somebody, what I did before and what most of us alcoholics like to do, we want to introduce you to the person we want you to know, not the person who we are, right? So I was able to actually go in, look at another human being, look at him in the eye, and not be afraid of what they were going to see inside of me, you know, that they were going to see something I didn't want them to see, or I was going to see something them I didn't want to see, and actually share my true self with this person, you know. So that was, you know, that was a beautiful thing, and it was a step towards healing my relationship and healing myself and being able to walk back into this program and truly be honest with myself and the people around me, you know, because I didn't have that ability before. I couldn't. And like I always laugh about and say, you know, the first thing that we do when we walk in here as newcomers is we lie. Because somebody will walk up to us and say, how are you doing? And we go, oh, fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. We're not fine, you know, we're miles from fine, right? You know? So anyway, you know, I've worked hard to stay connected in the program. I don't hit as many meetings as I like to. I work out of town. One of the beautiful things that's happened in my life today is I've started my own business. I have a building down old Orchid, and I'm opening a kombucha bar. And it's something that was a passion that I had going for a long, long time. And I always let fear get in my way of actually going, jumping in and actually getting a building, set it up and actually have my own business. And today that's going to happen, you know. 31st, we're going to open. And then another result of being in this program is the company that I used to work for, especially Crane. Owner of the company's name is Seth Hammond. And when I got sober, I was able to go up to that man. I was able to apologize to him, you know, and tell him that, you know, he was a great employer, took care of me, and I walked out of there one day just because I was just hungover, sick, pissed, and I decided I wasn't being treated right, and I left, you know. I didn't tell anybody. I just left, and I was a shop manager, and I just walked out, you know, which is, you know, that's not the way we do things, but, you know, I was in my disease. You know, at that point, I think I was living in a garage. And so I was able to go up and apologize to that man. And as a result, here last year, earlier in the year, he came up to me and asked me if I would be willing to go do a missile defense project over in the Kwajalein Islands. You know, and so I've been over there 3 times this year. We went out of the country and did another workshop over in Bali. So we've basically been out of the country about 2.5 months this year. And, you know, none of this would have happened if it wasn't for this program. Not any of it. You know, because when I was drinking, you know, it was paycheck to paycheck, you know, and even though I made really good money, I just, you know, it was all gone. It didn't bother me to go out and drop my week's wages in a bar, you know, over the weekend on my bike, you know, go out and show how rich I was and how cool I was, you know. I was always the first one to jump up and go, no, let me pay for it. You know, I got it, you know. So I wanted to look like somebody that I wanted you to think I was, you know. But, you know, it's not like that today, thank God, you know. I like to, like my wife always tells me, you know, I like to be able to walk up and come from a place of love today. Where before, you know, I always had good intentions, but my delivery really sucked. You know, if I had needed to talk to my sons or anybody like that, you know, it was always out of anger. You know, it was never, he's laughing because he knows that's true. It was always out of anger, you know, it was never coming from a place of love, you know. And today, you know, I've learned that if I come from a place of love, no matter what, it's going to be all right, you know. And the program's taught me, you know, as long as I don't drink, it's going to be all right. You know, we get a second chance in here and a third chance, you know, whatever it takes, you know. And the other thing I love about this program, you know, I've watched a lot of people come in and out of this program. I've been fortunate enough to stay, but I don't have a fear of going out because I've watched the way we treat people when they come back into this program, and it's with love, you know. There's no judgment. There's no judgment in here. It's just love, you know. And, you know, that's a beautiful thing. It really is. You know, we don't judge other people, and we don't have to worry about being judged, you know, when in here. You know, we get up, we do what we can do, and if we go out, we go out, you know. The good thing is we can come back in. If we don't die, you know, we can come back in. You know, that's always a possibility. You know, and there was something else I was going to touch on. I'm trying to think. One of the stories I was going to share was, you know, when I was first sober, I was working in Paso Robles, and I was running a crane out on the 46. They were doing these bridges. I was working for this crazy bridge company. These guys were just, they had this great big guy from, I think it was from Ukraine or something. He was like 6'6" and huge. And the guy was absolutely crazy, you know, just crazy. And he was, and so every day was just a nightmare. And I was just, you know, I was newly sober. I was still on that edge, you know. And I remember I called him from the seat of the crane one day, just, I can't do this. I'm just going nuts, you know. And then the hardest part was I was coming in off the 46 and I'd get on the 101 and I'd have to drive by Firestone Brewing Company. And I'm not lying when I tell you guys, that company, I was with them when they started their first brew crew, when they were making beer illegal out on Area 51 out of their winery, you know. So that was my favorite, you know. That was my beer. And I'd drive by that place and I was just, my hands were just clenched around the steering wheel. And I just stare straight ahead and try not look at that off ramp, because I knew if I looked at it too long, I was going to steer off it. And once I did that, you know, I was done. That was it, you know. There was no turning back, you know. And it was just, oh man, I just remember those times, you know. Thank God it's not like that anymore. You know, today I can honestly say I don't have a desire for the drink. I just don't. It's. I don't know when it left, you know. I know when I first got sober, I was still riding with the club and we were going out to bars and I wasn't drinking, you know. I'd go with those guys, but I wouldn't drink, you know. I don't recommend that. I think it's a really bad idea. I was still carrying a gun. I was still, my behavior was still horrible. I just wasn't drinking, you know. And matter of fact, it was probably worse because I was angry. But the fact of the matter is somehow, and I truly believe it was my higher power, God, you know, was looking after me, looking over me and guiding me, because like I've said before, you know, when my prayer is, I thank God for another day of sobriety. And I do that because I don't say, give me another day. I say, thank you for my day of sobriety, because I think it was his idea to begin with, because I had no intentions of stopping drinking, you know. It wasn't my idea to quit. It just happened, you know, the way it happened. So anyway, I don't know. I guess I'm supposed to go till what? 8 o'clock? 8:15. Is that 8:15? 8:30. Oh, 8:30. I ain't making 8:30. I can tell you that right now. I might make 8 o'clock. You know.
That's
all
right.
So.
That's okay.
No, and. Let me think of some other things I wanted to touch on. You know, I remember I was in the Lion's Den. I was a treasurer there for quite a while, and I love that. I love going to Lion's Den. It's one of my favorite meeting places. You know, and I had a lot of love in there. You know, I remember when I first went in there, and Joe would sponsor me. I would always hang out in this little left corner. You know, where the guys hung out. And I remember people talking about, you know, stay in the center of the herd, you know, surround yourself with good sobriety. And that's what I did. You know, I remember doing that, you know. And the other thing, I remember all these things on the wall, all these little sayings, you know, and about one day at a time. And I remember when the first time it hit me what that actually meant, that one day at a time, you know, because they always say, oh, it's only one day at a time. And what I took from that and what I seen that was enlightened by it was, one of the deals I was talking about was like the worst day of my life on this job, and it was just horrible, and I, you know, I'm not going to make another day. And then to wake up tomorrow and everything would be all right. You know, I made it through that day, and the next day everything was all right, you know. And right there it told me, you know, that's one day at a time. Every day doesn't have to be like this day where it's tough and it's hard and it's miserable and I don't know if I'm going to make it another day without a drink, you know. You know, I just love that, you know. And then one of my favorite speakers was Earl Hightower, you know. Lisa B gave me one of his CDs, you know, and I downloaded it. And I used to hike every day, and I would listen to that thing day in, day out, day in. I must have listened to it 1,000 times. That and Wayne Butler, right? You know. You know, it just, those speaker tapes just, you know, they kept me connected. They kept me in there, you know. And one of the other things I'll share that I liked was when I first got my big book, I tried reading the first 164 pages, right? I got in there, you know, you're working with your sponsor, but I'm going to take trying to read it. I couldn't do it. But I read the stories in the back, you know, the stories about the drunks and the people getting sober. And I could relate to that, you know, and I'd read those over and over and over again, you know. And then finally, once my head cleared enough to kind of comprehend stuff, I was working the steps with Joe, then those 164 pages started making sense. You know, I could put those things together. And I could get in there and study that and look at it. Where before I just look at it and was like just looking at words. I couldn't get anything out of it, nothing. But I could go to the back on those stories about those drunks. And I could relate, you know, because they were telling my story, you know. I could relate to them, you know. Those were my people, you know. I loved it. So what was the other thing that, the other thing that I'll share with you is I, like I said, I like to sponsor people, you know. Sponsoring became a big part of my program. And I brought some of the sponsors. Some of my sponsees, you know, I let one of my sponsees come and live with me, you know. Him and he had a son, you know, and that sponsee went back out and he ended up passing away, you know, from this disease, you know. And that was one of the, that just about killed me, you know. I even though I knew I wasn't responsible for that, it just tore me up, you know. And then we let another person from the program come in and live with us. But both these people that I brought in, I told them, one of the things you have to do, you have to be honest with me. If you lie, you're out, you're gone. If you lie or you use, you're gone, you know. And I asked that person to leave because they weren't honest about something, you know. You know, and you look back on that, and it just eats you up. And then the same thing with the second person we let come stay with us. Wasn't honest. We asked that person to leave. But I truly believe that, you know, if you're in here and you don't have a sponsor, you know, that's, you know, and I know guys that sponsor themselves, you know, and they stay sober, right? I know a person in here with over 20 years that's sponsoring themselves, and they're still sober. So I'm not saying you can't do it. I just don't know how you do it, you know. I need a sponsor, you know. I need somebody I can call and you know, share my, you know, my pain with, somebody I can call and be honest with when I don't feel like I can tell that to anybody else, you know. You know, I need that. I need that sponsorship, you know, and I need to sponsor guys because if I don't sponsor guys, I don't stay in the book, you know. I don't have that drive to just stay in the book on my own. But if I have guys to sponsor, we sit down, we go over the steps, and we're going over the steps. Part of the deal is designed is we read the book together, you know, and we sit there and we go through it, we highlight, and we talk about it, you know. And that's, to me, that's a good way to stay in and stay connected, you know. Right, Leo? You know, I look around here, I see Lynn over there. You know, there's people in this program that just have kept me connected, you know, kept me in here, showed me the way, you know, made me feel like I was at home every time I walked in here with a warm hug and a smile, you know, and I love that. But anyway, I think I'm done. I think I've rambled long enough. You know, my sponsor told me when you run out of things to say, it's time to leave the podium. So I'm there.
Hey, let's give Shane Pete another hand. No, right.